House for Brooklyn, John Forte.
Peace and love. This is John Forte, and I am in Montreal. Maybe I'm not, but I'm saying I am. Listening to 1690 AM CJ Low Radio. Now it's time to play my record.
Learn to get with my hands to do better, like dude, you know better.
You're listening to CJ LO News. Pressure is mounting for the Quebec government to act on abuse and violence against women in the province. In the first 4 months of 2026, 9 women in Quebec have been killed in intimate partner violence contexts. Earlier this week, co-spokesperson for the political party Quebec Solidaire, Rouba Ghazal, published an open letter to Quebec's new premier, Christine Frachette, urging her to adopt new legislation tackling intimate partner violence and femicide. The letter has over 600 signatures. Here is Ghazal.
It's a very big and important symbol to have a woman premier in Quebec, Madame Christine Frachette. But symbols can't save lives. We need to go forward than symbols. Today, I'm here and I ask Madame Christine Frachette to act, to listen to all women, men who want to prevent another feminicide to happen in Quebec.
The letter urges for the adoption of the Gabi Renault bill. Renault was killed last September and found in her apartment 3 weeks after her death. This bill would allow women to access certain records about their partners to see if they have a registered history of violence.
This law will inform women about the violent action of their partner. They can know if their partner has done violent action with his ex. So to have information can protect lives, women.
Quebec Parliament is prorogued until May 5th. Ghazal and the over 600 signatories of the letter want to see Premier Frachette reopen Parliament immediately to pass the bill. Here is Manon Massé, an MLA with Quebec Solidaire and a signator of the letter.
We have the money. Madame Frachette have the money. She said that she wants to do something. So I ask her to do it for real, not only for the flash or the show.
The open letter also suggests an increase of funding for women's shelters. Here is Louis Rendeau, an advocate for intimate partner violence victims with Maison Femme.
To help more women, we need more workers, more frontline workers, and we also need new shelter.
Premier Frachette would not respond for comment. For CJLO News, I'm Adam Innes.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, Death of the Mid-Range family, and yes, play that song, Orlando Magic, play that gosh darn song. It's Monday, it's 9 a.m., you are on CJLO 1690, I am your host, Liba Sikorela Jello, and welcome back to another edition of Death of the Mid-Range. Man, I am happy to be back. It's so beautiful outside, the birds are chirping. The sun is shining. Waking up this morning was not a problem at all. But maybe if you were a Detroit fan, it was a problem. I wanted to shout out the Orlando Magic by playing this song. I kind of been obsessed with it, I ain't gonna lie. I know it's like a meme kind of song, kind of a joke song, but it kind of hits. Like, Orlando, like, I kind of, you know, it kind of gets me going in the morning. But yeah, we back. The NBA playoffs have been absolutely amazing. I feel like at one point every series was tied one game apiece. Like we're not going to have any sweeps, or maybe OKC. Well, you know, OKC's are always the outlier. But on today's show, we are going to talk about everything that happened in the second week of the playoffs. We'll also do a little injury checkpoint, because I know there's been a couple of main dudes that I've gone down. I also wanted to add a panic meter for every series that I'll talk about today. I'll add the panic meter feature, which is just how I'm feeling about my predictions that I made last week. A little preview, right? A little teaser of that. I ain't feeling too good. I ain't gonna lie. There's, you know, certain teams that I saw going really far that may not get there. You know, they may not get there. I'm talking to you, Detroit. I'm talking to you. And then I also wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about this rookie class, right? There's not a lot of them left who are playing big minutes in the playoffs, but the ones that are left have been absolutely hooping, and it just kind of keeps, it's on the same vibe that every NBA fan has been on the whole year, which we're all like just dumbfounded about how ready these dudes are coming in the league and how like able to perform and impact winning. They just have been amazing. But before we get into all that, I want to start with the Detroit versus Orlando series, which is, for me, I've been watching, I'll be fully honest, I've been watching all of the series except the Thunder versus Suns one, which had some controversy. We'll get into it after the break. But I've been watching every series in the playoffs, and this is the one that I like the most. Detroit versus Orlando has not been a slugfest like people would expect. At times, it has kind of been that offensively, because they're two teams that are known for not having the most potent offense. But defensively, it's been amazing. Secondly, the physicality between these two teams have been just great. They were saying on the broadcast during game three that this must be one of the hardest series to ref, because both of these teams are so physical with one another. If you start calling every ticky-tack foul, I mean, we'd be here for 5 to 6 hours, you know. But if you haven't followed, the Orlando Magic take game three after losing game two, but, you know, stealing one in Detroit. So Detroit fans got their win. We were talking about it last week, how Detroit had not won a home playoff game since 2008. Golly, I ain't going to talk too much, you know, because I'm a Wizards fan, and, you know, we probably got some crazy stats to go along with that too. But so yeah, the Detroit fans at Little Caesars Arena finally got their home win, right? We're really happy. It was a great win by Detroit, who it was back and forth, and in the third quarter, they really locked in, right? Their defense allowed them to run and play in the full court, not having to play a half court offense, you know, playing transition, even semi-transition has really helped Detroit generate points, because if you haven't been tuned in, Detroit is not a good a half court offense team, and it's been even worse in the playoffs. And so after game two, you know, I was feeling good, because just to remind y'all, my prediction is that Detroit would get out of here in five, right? I said whoever's stepping up to the plate, I got Detroit in five, you know. And so I'm like, all right, because Denzel last week had the Magic coming out in seven, I believe. So I was like, all right, you know, I'm called Denzel, you know, I'm gonna flex on him. And then game three happened, back in Orlando. And the Pistons just looked flat, like really, really flat. They were down by double digits pretty much the whole game. And then they made a little push towards the end. But then Franz Wagner kind of put that all to bed. And Paolo hit a crazy shot down the stretch, which for me wasn't lucky, right? Because I feel like he had like a nice bounce on it, and it bounced really high, and then it dropped in. And Orlando was able to close out the game. But that moment probably gave us one of the all-time quotes of the playoffs. Maybe it's corny. I'll read it to you. Y'all let me know. For me, I thought it was tough. Paolo stepped up to the podium after the game and said, "The basketball gods don't reward hesitancy." And I honestly thought that was kind of a bar. That was a bar. Even though Paolo Banchero has been very hesitant at times during this series, but I thought it was funny. But just to kind of zoom out and and kind of evaluate what this means for Detroit and Orlando, it's tough. It's really tough for Detroit. I'll start with Detroit. It's tough. That the outlook of the series, I'm not going to say it looks dull, but it definitely looks rough. How is it that a year later, Detroit's second best player in the playoffs is still Tobias Harris? How is that possible? Last year against the Knicks, it was this core's, you know, first playoff run, you know, getting their toes wet. We understood it. They stole two games at Madison Square Garden, showed really good things in game 5 and 6. Could have won the series or extended it to 7, right? But you could see it. Tobias Harris was overextended. He was being asked to play a role that he's not ready to play at this point of his career, has never really played at any point in his career. And a year later, maybe we were all brainwashed or something. Probably me, I ain't gonna lie, because I'm the one that picked him. But Tobias Harris is shooting below 40% in the series, but because he has to, right? He has to be putting a lot of shots because nobody else is being aggressive. I will say that in Game 3, Asar Thompson took it upon himself to be more aggressive. But when times got tough towards the end of the second half, he disappeared. And his lack of jump shot, you know, his lack of self-creation made it really tough for him to generate looks. Duncan Robinson can't be that guy for you. And so Tobias Harris has to be the second option. And even if Tobias Harris was your second option, it wouldn't be a problem. But he's your second most impactful player overall. Jalen Duren averaged 19 points during the regular season. Jalen Duren was an all-star. He deserved to be an all-star. I'm not here to say that. But where has he gone? I'm not going to say I was the most tapped in on Detroit's regular season, but how is it possible that he goes from, you know, putting up 19 on dudes, 19s a game, and I know he's had some really good outburst of offense, which I'm guessing is against teams that weren't as physical, but he's averaging 9 points, right? He's barely shooting 40%, and he is getting outworked. He's getting out-muscled. Wendell Carter has eaten him up wholeheartedly. Wendell Carter Jr. has just eaten him up. Jalen Duren has become a non-factor offensively for this series. So much so that Paul Reed, who is their third string center, had to come in the second half of the third quarter, in the third quarter, to help out offensively because Jalen Duren was such a non-factor that he got benched. He wasn't even in foul trouble. He got benched. Now, defensively, I'll give it to him. He's been really good. But again, defensively, Detroit has been really good, right? I think the Magic, that was their first time putting up more than 100 points. And even at that, it was low 100 points. So it's rough. It's rough for Detroit. The outlook on this series, it looks kind of glim. I'm not going to lie. And I didn't even talk about the bench. Ron Holland has been unplayable in the series and therefore just stopped getting minutes. Dennis Jenkins has looked like a deer in headlights. Obviously, it's his first playoff series. It's his, you know, first time playing at this level. I totally understand, and I'm not, you know, bashing him for that. But he's been a non-factor. Javonte Green has you know, brought some good energy. Isaiah Stewart, too. But it's just that, man. I was lying to myself. I was in denial. And I thought that the defense would be at such a high level that they could play transition and that it wouldn't be, at least in this first round, that it wouldn't be a problem. But it has been a problem. And it's been ugly at times. It's been very, very ugly. I spent some time on Cade. He's been overtaxed already through two games, and you could feel it in Game 3 when he came in. He looked tired. He looked very tired. He looked like he was sleepwalking. He looked. I don't know. He looked like he had gone through a 7-game series already, and he kind of had. I mean, he's had to play above 40 minutes every time out on the floor, and he has to initiate every offense. And you know, Caris LeVert has come in try to do some things. You know, try to help, but yeah, I guess something's got to change. JB Bickerstaff is going to have to try to find some type of combination to get Duren to help out. But if Duren doesn't step up offensively, and through three games, really, there's been no improvement, then this series might get very, very dark for the Detroit Pistons because they look like the easy flame out at the number one seed, right? A bad offense, right? One franchise player trying to do it all. Really good team defense, but that's not enough in the playoffs. This will send us to our first ad break. When we come back, I will, do not worry, I will give my flowers to the Orlando Magic because there's a lot of flowers to give. And then we'll keep going on with the other matchups in the playoffs. Don't go nowhere, and we will be right back.
Want to know the easiest way to help out your favorite community radio station? Well, there's this thing called the Community Radio Initiative. The National Campus and Community Radio Association and stations from across the country like ours are asking the federal government for direct funding for our sector. For CGLO's part, there are so many people at our station that are truly passionate about radio, and getting that funding would allow us to do so much more on and off the air. So if you want to help us out, head on over to mycri.ca. There's a letter writing campaign going on right now, and on that site, you'll find a tool that will generate an email for your MP and a bunch of other ministers in about 30 seconds. Again, that site is mycri.ca. Thanks for your support.
Tune in to the Anatomy of Creepy Music right here on CGLO 1690 AM every Saturday from noon until 2 p.m., where we examine the origins and the evolution of music from the Caribbean.
Welcome back. You are still on CGLO 1690. I'm still your host, Libasiko Elajalo, and this is still Death at a Mid-Range, closing it out on this Pistons versus Magic series. Before I forget, my panic meter on my prediction of you know, the Pistons coming out of the series is at an 8 out of 10, because as you've understood, I'm scared. And I'm scared of that big three, man. I'm scared of that big three. Franz Wagner, Paolo Banchero, because, you know, he's Italian, and Desmond Bane have put on, right? And like we talked about last week, it's actually kind of funny to see that this is the first time they've been healthy in a really long time. Add to that Jalen Suggs as well, who I don't really consider part of that big three because he's pretty inconsistent. But when he's on, he's on. And when that three is dropping, that three is dropping and it's helping a lot. It's nice to see this Orlando Magic team putting some kind of momentum together. I'm not going to lie. After years of struggling, years of coming into the season being like, okay, this is the moment, and then injuries, you know, injuries suck, bro. Injuries are actually the worst, and we're seeing it in these playoffs. They are finally putting it together. And could we spend some time on maybe saying, okay, if this wasn't Detroit, maybe they struggle more, or if it, you know, if this is just an advantageous matchup and whatever. Maybe. But at the end of the day, they're showing up, and Jamal Mosley has done an amazing job keeping his troops engaged, especially these dudes on the bench. Kane, Anthony Black, who had been struggling since coming back from injury, who has brought them a lot of good minutes. Wendell Carter Jr., who is a totally changed player from his years in Chicago and has just been so steady for them when Gugu Abatadze has struggled more. But yeah, Orlando's been, you know, when they've been hitting the three, at least at a regular rate, on game one and game three, then they've won. And these three dudes have played really well, right? Desmond Bane and Franz Wagner have allowed Paolo Banchero to kind of just be more downhill. And maybe that's why he's been struggling this year, right? And it's been an up and down year for Paolo, especially in mainstream NBA media. But when he's going downhill, like he did in the fourth quarter, to keep him hanging around when the Detroit made that big run in game three, he's unplayable. He is unplayable. And also, Tobias Harris has to guard him. Tobias Harris has to guard him. Yes, Detroit's a good defensive team, but with some holes. With some holes, for sure. Anyways, I hope that this series goes the distance. I think it's been super enjoyable, and I want this series to keep going. And also, you know, I didn't sports bet because we don't support that here, but I did bet with Denzel that Detroit will come out of this series. And more importantly, I picked Detroit going to the finals. Don't spend some time on that, please. I hope that doesn't ruin all my credibility because the more they play, the more I'm like, okay, there is no way, absolutely no way they win any series past this point. But yeah, go Detroit and Orlando Magic, play that gosh darn song. Let's stay in the East and talk about the Atlanta Hawks versus the New York Knicks series, which also has been super interesting. Last week we came on, and we were very dismissive of the Hawks. And again, I've been dismissive of the Hawks. I thought that their winning streak wasn't anything to be, you know, up in arms about. I thought that they played teams that were tanking, right? They played the Nets twice, the Wizards twice. I like to say that all the time. But Atlanta has been good and very good at that. CJ McCollum, who was just seen as a throwaway from, again, you can thank the Wizards, Atlanta Hawks fans. He was just seen as a celery filler in the Trae Young trade. And now he's been basically their best player in this series. Since we last talked, the Atlanta Hawks stole a game in Madison Square Garden to tie it up at 1-1. And they've split the series at home, making the series now 2-2. And honestly, if the show had been before Saturday, right, because that's when they played, before Saturday, where I thought that was the Knicks' best overall game, then my panic meter would have been at an 8, I believe, a 7 or 8. Right now I have it at a 5 because I feel like the Knicks have not figured out how to win, but have at least made the adjustments, right? Because if you take it back a little bit, when the Knicks went up 1-0, then they lost two games, right? They lost back-to-back games. And it was, for multiple reasons, Karl Anthony Towns was not aggressive enough, right? And my problem with Kat, and we've talked about it, has been him not being physical enough. And this is just a thing that, it's an ongoing theme in his career. Obviously, I'm not talking about all the Twitter trolls, you know, talking about him being zesty or whatever. I don't buy into that. But his physicality on the court is too, it's not constant enough. And an Atlanta team whose sole big man is Onyeka Okongwu, who's undersized. I think he's like 6'9". And behind him, they have nobody, right? Jock Landale is injured, and Mo Gay is not a traditional center, right? He's a tall, lengthy guy, but he's very skinny. So they don't have a backup center. So for me, it's inconceivable that the offense would not be run for Kat to have post up or for Kat to attack Onyeka, right, to try to get him in foul trouble. And at times, I've seen the Knicks look for him, but the problem is he's getting pushed out by players like Gabe Vincent. Gabe Vincent, on multiple possessions, I'm saying, I wish I could roll the tape, but this is a radio show, on multiple occasions, has pushed out Kat from the paint to either the best baseline or the three-point line, and he just gives up. And for me, it's inconceivable that you are letting forwards guard you. I get it, Kuminga's probably strong, right? I get it, Jalen Johnson's probably strong, but you're bigger. You are bigger. And in game four, right, for them to tie up the series, which was, it was a pivotal game. If you go down 3-1, you know, it's really hard to come back from that. I'm not Einstein, but I know that. And in game four, Mike Brown made sure that Kat was more involved. Now, I'm not here to say that the physicality has been better from Kat, even though on the boards he's been really good. I'm not, like, but he was more involved. They ran the offense way more through him. Because another problem with the Knicks was that Jalen Brunson was being played really, really well by Dyson Daniels. Right? The thing with Atlanta is that they have so many lengthy wings and a lot of size. They have a lot of size, right? Nikhil Alexander, next to CJ McCollum in that backcourt, brings a lot of size. And so they've been able to put Dyson Daniels on Jalen Brunson, who, by the numbers, over the past couple of seasons, has played Jalen Brunson in the regular season really, really good. Like he's been, Jalen Brunson has struggled to play against Dyson Daniels. And so his defense has been stellar. But the Knicks, especially in the playoffs, as of the last couple of years, have been so Brunson-centered that they just lived with him taking bad shots, right? And OG Anunoby has been really good in this series, but I know that in game two he didn't get going because of that. Mikal Bridges has struggled in this series, and it's because the ball just wasn't moving. Because Jalen Brunson was, we were relying on him, and it's on Jalen Brunson, but it's also on the other guys. They were just ball watching, and it wasn't just their clutch offense. Because when it got down to it, game two and three were decided by a point. And now in the stretch, it was give the ball to Jalen Brunson and space out. Karl Anthony Towns went scoreless in game two's fourth quarter and in game three's fourth quarter. And it's not because they were up 20. No, it was a tie game. But he didn't get shots. And again, for me, it's Kat is to blame, but also his point guard. Like, the team is to blame as well, but he is to blame the most because he has to assert himself. And I thought that in game four, he really did. First of all, triple-double. Shouts out to you, Kat. Shouts out to you, boy. But he inserted himself, and the ball was popping, right? The ball was moving, and it even helped Jalen Brunson because, you know, what's really hard to stop is ball movement, right? It's really hard to stop ball movement. Dribble, dribble, dribble. You can stop that, right? You can stop that. You can rotate. You can help, right? But ball movement, rotations, cuts, that helps. It really helps. And I don't think the series is over, because as we've seen throughout the season, and I really agreed with Kenny Beecham's take on one of his videos about this series. I think it was after Game 3, where he said, I've got to learn to trust what these NBA teams show me during the regular season. And I thought that was really true. I mean, it's true for me with Detroit. I really love Detroit, but maybe I should just actually trust that in the playoffs, these things might not change. And with the Knicks, it's that the Knicks have been super inconsistent, right? They've gone on 8-game winning streaks and then 5-game losing streaks, and everything seems to be in shambles. And this series has really, you know, showed that. And the problem is that when you're a second seed, right, a third seed, and that you come in being the higher seed and have all these expectations that the Knicks have had all season, when you start losing one, when you start losing two, people get frustrated, right? Mitchell Robinson benched in game three for a lot of game three, frustrated. And then Mike Brown coming to the podium saying, you know, we might not win it all. So he gives a long quote about how OKC went down 2-1 last year, and then they won the NBA championship. And then he's like, after that, he's like, oh, but I'm not saying we're going to win the championship, right? We're not going to win it all, but we have to be better, and we could come out like OKC. And so then every NBA Twitter page, every Instagram NBA page took out the little bit that he said, we might not win it all, and it went viral. And it was like, oh, Mike Brown's giving up on his guys, yada, yada, yada. When that's not really what he said. But I'm happy for Mike Brown, and I'm relieved, because it would have been really hard on him after, you know, losing his job in Sacramento and then now picking up a new gig with New York. And it really, like, it's going really well, right? Statistically, they've been better than under Thibodeau. And he made the adjustments. And the adjustment was to use Cat more as a hub and have Brunson run some off-ball actions. And maybe they figured it out. We'll see. Game 5 is tonight, I believe. Tonight. They're back in Madison Square Garden. Everybody knows that Game 5 is pivotal, especially in the 2-2 series. So, yeah, we'll see. If they can keep doing that, right, if Cat can continue asserting himself, even if maybe it doesn't go well, kind of keep chipping at it, being aggressive, then I think this series will be over. But, you know, they got to figure out a little problem as well that maybe was dormant in Game 4. And that problem is C.J. McCollum. Let's talk about the Hawks side of things. C.J. McCollum has been on the tear. He has been on the tear. And for this series, I don't have a quote of the series, but I do have a tweet of the series that I wanted to share. And it reads, Jalen Brunson won wars with Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, Donovan Mitchell, and Cade Cunningham in the first round. But C.J. McCollum is where he draws the line. I thought that was one. An excellent tweet. Oh, let me give some credit. That was my brother. What's his name? My brother Jace Perez, who said that on Twitter. And I thought that was an amazing tweet, because C.J. McCollum has been on the tear. And for me, a neutral fan of the NBA playoffs, since my team is not in it, to watch a former Wizard go and torch one of the top seeds has been insane. And in game 2 and 3, especially, not only was McCollum a great scorer, he was a clutch scorer. And he's been attacking Jalen Brunson, just attacking. It's been barbecue chicken. It's been more than barbecue chicken. I don't know what more than barbecue chicken, but it's been like a knife through butter. He's just been attacking him, attacking him, attacking him. And Alvarado has tried to guard him. Then they put McBride on him in game 3. It did not matter. And what was crazy to me is that, one, he had back-to-back clutch shots in game 2 and in game 3. And what was crazy to me is that in game 3, they put Josh Hart on him for a majority of the fourth quarter, which was working. Because, you know, you put length on the smaller guard, it always works. And then for the last possession, where the Hawks were down 1, you know where the ball was going. And yet, they still put McBride on him. And so, you know, calmly, McCollum got to his spots, and then rose up. And it took, and knocked it down, and then eventually they won. And it took until game 4 for them to make the permanent change to put Mikal Bridges on him. And CJ still got his buckets, but Mikal Bridges did a really good job on him. It's just been impressive. Age 34, still hooping. Shout out to him. But it's been impressive how the Knicks have had no answers for him. Absolutely no answers for him. And it's I think for me it was more on Brunson to so for me, if you put Brunson on Dyson Daniels, who's a non-shooter, or you put Dyson or you put Brunson on CJ McCollum because you're right, he's the shortest player on the court. If Dyson Daniels is gonna come screen for CJ McCollum's man, then for me, it's the person that's guarding CJ McCollum that has to make the effort to fight through the screen. Because it, you know that if you can see the switch, then McCollum is gonna kill, absolutely kill Brunson. Right? And then if, for example, Mikal Bridges ends up being on CJ McCollum, or that Alvarado or Josh Hart ends up being on CJ McCollum, these dudes are getting so little shots on offense that I feel like it was affecting their defense. And so maybe you do concede the switch, right? Because you don't feel like fighting through a nut, like through a 4-5 screen. But then Brunson is absolutely helpless out there. And when they lost those games, it brought back the conversation to, can you really win with a small guard? Can you win with a guard that's under, well, I'm not saying he's under 6 foot, but he barely at 6 foot. Can you really win? Because he's such a liability on defense. And CJ McCollum's not overpowering him. He's literally going around him or crossing him up or just getting to the basket, right? And so CJ McCollum has really helped the Hawks get those two wins that were really precious, because Jalen Johnson and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who were their more prominent guys throughout the whole year, have been struggling. Jalen Johnson, first playoff series, had a really good game three, but then had pretty much struggled throughout the whole series. Josh Hart has done a really good job on him. I will give him that. And Nikhil Alexander-Walker could not buy a bucket, could not buy a three-pointer, had been cold. Shout out to him for winning most improved player of the year. Definitely deserved. And then the one I really wanted to talk about as well was Jonathan Kuminga, who has had an up-and-down series, right? Game four was a non-factor. Game two and three, though, phew, wow. Game one, non-factor as well. May even have been negative factor with the kind of shots he was taking. But when it's hitting, wow. There's bursts where I'm like, wow, he's a star, right? He'll pull up for three. I'm like, he's a star. His confidence, he has the confidence of a star, that's for sure. And when he's hitting, then his defense is amazing as well. I feel like when his offense is going, his defense was amazing. He's done a really good job on Cat all series, and that may be more Cat than on the defense, but he got the results. And in that last possession in game three, he was everywhere, got them to win, had 20 points, right? For me, this series can go the length. It can go to six. It can go to seven. I still have the Knicks. My panic meter is at 5 because I believe that the Knicks will close it out, right? I believe that the Knicks will close it out. And this maybe was a really good wake-up call, especially to change up the offense, because Bridges and Hart cannot go scoreless in a game in the playoffs, especially when you gave up 5 first-round pick for one of the two. I'll let you guess who it is. Is it Bridges? Is it Hart? It's Bridges. He cannot go scoreless. But yeah, shout out to the Hawks for making this a series, and who knows, I've been wrong before and I will be wrong again, and I'm kind of starting to not believe my own instincts, because every time I predict something, the freaking opposite happens. But yeah, back to Madison Square Garden tonight, and we'll see how that series shakes out. Finishing out on the East, let's stay in Canada. Let's stay right here, y'all. The Toronto Raptors even up the series with the Cleveland Cavaliers, making this a 2-2 series. Now going back to Cleveland, game four was yesterday. Game four was ugly. Game four was ugly. Good Lord, I think they were in the 30s in the first half. It was bad. It was bad. But shout out to the Raptors, going down 2-0. Again, one of the teams that we kind of dismissed last week. I had the Cavs in 6, and Denzel had the Cavs in like 5 or 4. He's a crazy man. He has the Cavs going to the championship. But first two games, and it's kind of funny. I feel like each team has instilled their tempo and their style of play at home, right? So first two games in Cleveland, it's fast paced, a lot of 3-pointers. For a lot of good 3-point shooting for the Cleveland Cavaliers, like good offense to watch, really good offense, and they just submerged the Raptors with their speed and especially their height and their mastery in the pick and roll. James Harden along with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, especially Evan Mobley, were just incredible. Evan Mobley had probably two of the most assertive games that I've seen him play in the playoffs before, which was great to watch. And it also comes with experience, right? Sometimes we're not patient. And we'll talk about, you know, not being patient later on with Scoot Henderson, kind of the same thing. Sometimes we're not patient. These dudes are young. These dudes need experiences in the playoffs. And so, yeah, first two games, kind of easy wins for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Brandon Ingram couldn't seem to get anything going. And two games later, it's kind of feels like the same thing. His shooting numbers has been horrendous. So game three, they go back to Toronto, and it's pivotal, right? Toronto has to protect home court. They have to win. And when they did, the game was kind of, you know, back and forth the whole time until the fourth quarter. And I don't know if you guys heard of this brewing superstar that is just hiding called Jameson Battle. Jameson Battle. Let me introduce you to Jameson Battle, the left-hand assassin, the redhead assassin. Jameson Battle went 4-for-4 from three in October against the Cavaliers. About 8 months later, I'm hoping that's good math. About 8 months later, he goes 5-for-5 against the same team in the fourth quarter. Jameson Battle was scoreless through three quarters and had not played in the whole series. But Darko trusted him. And surely enough, in the fourth quarter, he started balling out. He was just letting it fly. And the biggest problem with Toronto's offense in the first two games was, one, the spacing and the three-point shooting. It was impossible for them to get anything going. Darko made the choice to start Jacoby Walter. And I really like that because Jacoby Walter shot 40%+ in like the last like couple months of the NBA season. And so there was really a wanted adjustment to bring in more three-point shooting. And he shot him, did not make him. He went 0-for-6 in game three. And I believe he started the game 0-for-5 in game four as well. But with Jameson Battle, who hadn't played the whole series because he's a defensive liability, to put him in, to trust him to play. And maybe he could catch fire. Maybe he could help. And he definitely did help. They came in that fourth quarter. The game was, you know, back and forth, close. And then they just pulled away. Scotty Barnes, RJ Barrett, both dropping 30. Brandon Ingram kind of taking a step back. You know, only attempting, I think, 9 shots. They submerged him. And then, you know, maybe if you're a Cavs fan, you're like, okay, it's their game. They're coming back home. Scotiabank Arena ain't the easiest arena to play in if you're an away team. So come on. I will give you that. It's chill. But then game four was ugly. My goodness. Like I said, it was really, really ugly. But again, kind of same thing. Back and forth until the fourth quarter. And I would say until the end of the fourth quarter. And then the Cavs started to pull away a little bit. They had a 7-point lead, which, if I do the math correctly, in a game like that, feels like 35. Like, it felt like a 35-point lead. But then the Raptors fought. And there's one name that I haven't mentioned yet, who for me is in contention in being maybe the Raptors' just best player, right? Just the Raptors' best player in the series. It's Colin Murray-Boyce, CMB. He's averaging damn near 20 points and 10 rebounds in this series. He has been so impressive. In a series where Jakob Poeltl has been almost unplayable, Mr. Colin Murray-Boyce, who's a rookie, by the way, has been incredible. Had 22 points in game three. He had double-digit points and a great impact in game one and two. Like, even though they lost, he was still, you know, the shining star. And in game four, grabbed like 5 offensive rebounds down the stretch and gave a chance for this team to win. Now, going back to Cleveland, I still have Cleveland winning this series because their offense is just, like, is overpowering. And what I loved is that the Raptors did kind of what I thought the Pistons would be able to do for longer stretches, is that they played such good defense that they didn't have to play half-court offense. And it didn't really matter because they missed a lot of shots. I mean, they took, like, almost 100 shots, and they shot, like, 30%, which was insane. But they played, you know, transition, semi-transition. That's where the bread and butter will be for the Raptors. If they have a chance of winning this series, it will have to be fueled by their defense. And their defense has been really good, especially on Harden and Mitchell, who had back-to-back horrible games. And Harden, I'm not going to talk about, but for Mitchell, it's you know, it's unlike him to have back-to-back bad playoff games. So, you know, game one and two in Cleveland, played at fast-paced, you know, high-scoring games. Game three and four, very low-scoring games. And, well, although the Raptors, they have, you know, a flurry of threes in game three, but especially game four, the Raptors, you know, played like they wanted to. It was sluggish. It was grinded out. It was the shooting percentages were horrid, but that's what they got to make it. It's got to be a slugfest for them to win. Panic meter, I have it at 6.5 because there is things that I saw, like Evan Mobley totally disappearing and not being a factor, like, at all. Max Strus's shooting has been up and down, and as Sam Merrill kind of looked outmatched, especially down the stretch, they were kind of targeting him. And the buckets that got the Raptors back in the game were on Sam Merrill. And the flagrant foul that Sam Merrill ends up, you know, doing is because he's getting, you know, outworked. Absolutely outworked. But I'm a fan of this Raptors team responding. And if Ingram can just get it going one of these games, he's due for a big breakout game, then I believe the Raptors can pull out this series. But obviously, again, I went with the Cleveland Cavaliers. So we'll see. Hopefully, right? It's been an interesting series. I've enjoyed game 3 and 4 because I'm such a fan of Scotiabank Arena. Is it time to take a little trip out west? We talk about the east a lot. And I want to stop with, you know what? I'll stop in Portland. And then after the break, we'll go to Los Angeles. Portland Trailblazers versus San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs won last night, up to 3-1. Wembanyama was back because in the time that we've been apart, Wembanyama got concussed and then went through concussion protocol, missed game 3, and then came back for game 4. Or I should say missed game 3, was on the bench for game 3, looked at everybody in the crowd in, what is it called? Modem Arena? No, I'm not getting that right. I have no idea. Modem Forum? Okay, no, I'm going to just get up. Looked at everybody in the Trailblazers Arena and said, y'all would have got 4-0'd. Y'all would have got swept. Basically, the boy basically said, if I ain't get injured, y'all would have got swept. Because if y'all don't know, in game 2, even though the Trailblazers had a great start of the game, and then Wemby got injured, which then led to the Trailblazers, you know, closing out the game, winning by 3. Spurs got a good look at it. Vassell got a good look at it in game 2 to tie it up. Did not go. There's a lot to talk about in this series. Scoot Henderson. I saw a tweet that said Scoot Henderson has arrived at the ripe age of 22. Because we have not been patient with Scoot. It's the truth. It's actually the truth. And I thought his game 2 and 3 were really, really good. And even game 1. He's been really good through 3 games. But then was held scoreless last night. And he's been that lead guard that they drafted. Right? Because if you remember, he was in conversation about who we going to draft. Wemby, Scoot. That conversation was very quick, obviously, but he was the second best prospect in the draft, and he ended up going third, right? Because the Hornets had the second pick and then chose Brandon Miller instead of him. But he's been that lead guard, working the pick and roll. That pull up three has been nice. It's not usually in his game, but it's been nice. And when it falls, then he's so strong getting to the basket. The whole game opens up for him. So Scoot Henderson has been exemplary. I've been a fan of Jrue Holiday's, you know, OG kind of vibe, still producing. The one thing I'll say about this series is that the Blazers have shown good things, right? Game 2 was not an anomaly. They're able to hang with this team. And even in game 4, they were up 15 at halftime. And even in game 3, they were up, I think, double digits at some point. No, they were up. They were up double digits in the third quarter. And especially in game 3, it felt like they could, you know, win the game when Wemby, because Wemby wasn't playing, it felt like they could win the game. The biggest problem with the Blazers in this series is that they've been unable to keep a lead. Any kind of separation they've had with the Spurs, they've just kind of given it up, right? In game 3, it was just, they were up double digits in the third quarter, they were playing really well, and then Mitch Johnson made the adjustment of playing Carter Bryant at the center. And that's something that we've seen a couple times throughout the year when they've been struggling. They did it when they came back 25 against the Clippers, of playing really small with Carter Bryant under 5. And Carter Bryant just gets after it, man. He knows what he's in there. He knows what it is. He knows he needs to be the most scrappiest dude ever. And he'll shoot that thing too. And him and Dylan Harper is why I wanted to talk about the rookies, right, in these playoffs. But guess what? It's 45, and I got to send y'all to our last little ad break. But I promise when we come back, we got a lot more to talk about, and we will close out this episode in the best of fashion. Stay with me. I will see you very soon.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Blue. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
Do you like bubble baths? Hot cocoa on cold night? Snuggling up with a sweetie and listening to the radio? Well, if you answered yes to at least two of those, might I suggest Advice by the Fireplace, CJLO's number one easy-listening comedy advice talk radio show hosted by me, Delilah Karen. We bring on a guest or two from the Montreal comedy world to answer real advice questions and maybe share a few funny stories along the way. Advice by the Fireplace, every Wednesday from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. right here on CJLO 1690. Oh, also, I love you.
All right, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. You are still on CJLO 1690. This is still Death of the Midrange, and I'm still your host, Libasico Lajalo. Let's close out this edition of Death of the Midrange in the best of fashion. We're going to keep talking about this Spurs team. But no, as I was saying, yeah, the rookies changed the game in Game 3 of the NBA playoffs. I'll say it again. The rookies changed the game in Game 3 of the NBA playoffs. It was surreal to watch, right? De'Aaron Fox couldn't get it going. Stephon Castle in his own right was hooping, absolutely hooping. But when he went to the bench, nothing was clicking. And Dylan Harper just turned up. But they didn't just turn up in a way where somebody could have a good game in the NBA and no catch fire, right? Hitting threes after threes, and you're like, all right, he's having a good day. He was hooping in the way you're like, oh, wow. This is a superstar. This is a superstar. He was getting to the basket. He was chirping with Scoot Henderson. He was hitting those threes. And for me, there's two marquee plays. There's Carter Bryant getting a block on the defensive end, and then Dylan Harper going in transition, doing an in and out between the legs spin on Drew Holiday. Every guard in the NBA would not dare to go at Drew Holiday like that. Dylan Harper said, hold my drink. I got this. And then finished with his silky left hand. And another play was after chirping with Scoot Henderson, who picked up a stupid technical, by the way. He drives by Dylan Harper, like scores an open layup, and then just starts losing it on Dylan Harper, like just screaming at him. And on the next play, Dylan Harper gets the ball in a deep corner, jab steps, gets past Scoot Henderson, and just yams it on Donovan Click. Just yams it in a way that I've never seen, like, a dude that size yam it. And yeah, 29 points, I believe he finished with, and they needed every one of those points. Because when Steph Castle went to the bench, De'Aaron Fox was not able to step up, and then I was going to be like, okay, I was going to come on the show and be like, De'Aaron Fox needs to step up. He did in Game 4, which was necessary. But like in Game 3, I was like, damn, De'Aaron, like, you got to do something about this, you know? Like, the two rookies are stepping up. Where are you? You know, where are you? And he had, like, he's been kind of low-key in this series. I thought he was really good in Game 1. But in Game 2, it was tougher for him to get going. And so, shout-out to Mitch Johnson for trusting his rookies. And shout-out to the rookies for being so prepared. Them two, right? CMB, Colin Murray-Bowles. I probably won't have time to talk about VJ Edgecombe, but he's been amazing, even though Game 3 and 4 has been really tough on him. But Game 2, he was amazing. So it's just, you know, it's great things. And again, to bring it back to the Wizards, I'm sorry to always do that, guys. I'm sorry, but that's why the lottery matters, right? If I can take a little break in the playoffs and say that's why the lottery matters. We are 12 days away from the NBA lottery, but that's why it matters. Because the Spurs lottery pick, Dylan Harper, won them the game, right? He got the Spurs back in it. And then another Spurs lottery pick, Stephon Castle, came back off the bench and finished out the game. Right? And then another lottery pick, Carter Bryant ignited their defense and kept them afloat. I'm not saying that the Wizards have been screwed over in the past, and you know, and that it's all the lottery's fault, because there's been moments where we haven't been, you know, we haven't drafted well, but it matters, right? All that while their number one pick was sitting on the bench. And to that, I rest my case. My panic meter, as you can believe, is very low. It's at a 2 out of 10. I had the Spurs coming out in 4. It will probably be in 5 or 6. Probably 5. The Trailblazers have shown good things. That's what I'll say. I think they have a really good team. They just need to keep building on it. Shannon Sharp has been unplayable in the sense that he just refuses to make the right reads on defense. It's been bad. And I get it. He's a 20-point scorer in the NBA regular season, but the playoffs is different. It doesn't matter, right? You see dudes who were averaging below 10 points, Carly Murray Bowles, averaging double digits. You see dudes that were averaging 20 points and that now can't buy a bucket. Talking to you, Jalen Duren. Yeah, I'm on your butt, boy. I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving you, boy. So, yeah, that's what I love about the playoffs, because it's a different sport. It's an actual different sport. So I thought it's been, you know, you just see different players step up, and Dylan Harper was like that, right? Carter Bryant, I can be appreciative of what you did in the regular season, right, if you showed out. But if you're able to do it at a pivotal game 3 away from home while your best player is on the bench, then that's shout out to you. Honestly, shout out to you. We'll talk about the Lakers. We'll talk about the Lakers. I can't believe I have to remind y'all, but I chose the Rockets to come out of this series in 7. Now, mind you, I didn't think Kevin Durant was going to be injured, and the latest report on him I read this morning was that he has a bone spur in his ankle and that he'll be out for a couple weeks. You know what, KD? Go home already. It might not be worth sticking around. You know what? Don't travel. Don't even travel with the team. The Lakers are up 3-1 in the series. The Rockets finally got a win last night. And my panic meter, is quite high, guys. It's, you know, my heart rate is quite high as well. I had, you know, like I said, the Rockets coming down 7. And game 1, they didn't have KD. All right, they didn't have KD. That's okay, right? Game 2, they had KD. Still lost. And then I think game 3 is what did it for me. If you didn't follow game 3, the Rockets were up 6 with 30 seconds to go. I repeat, they were up 6 with 30 seconds to go at home after having played a really good game. Honestly, a really good game. I thought they contained LeBron really well. I thought the role players on the Lakers balled out, but were still contained. I thought Marcus Smart didn't turn it up until the end. And the Rockets grab a rebound, up 6 with 30 seconds to go. And Jabari Smith decides just to throw it away, basically. Marcus Smart gets it back, rises up for a 3, and Jae'Sean Tate just decides to foul the absolute dog out of him. I will not curse, do not worry, but he just fouls the absolute dog. It's not even a debate. You better throw that challenge away. It wasn't even a debate. Just mauls him for no reason. Marcus Smart is not Stephen Curry, Jae'Sean. Calm down. Marcus Smart calmly steps up, makes the 3 free throws. Shouts out to him. Rockets take a timeout. Then they run a play to get the ball in. Reed Sheppard, and we'll talk about Reed Sheppard, grabs the ball, dribbles, tries to dribble out of the double team. LeBron gets the back tap steal on him. Then they throw it back to LeBron, who throws it to Luke Kennard, who throws it back to LeBron. LeBron pump fakes, then makes the 3, and it's a tie game. And as everybody predicted, LeBron, 41 years old, just brings his team back from the brink. And in the overtime, Marcus Smart decided to take over. Offensive rebounds, right? Making the right reads with his screens, diving to the rim. And the Lakers pulled out a win after being down 6 with 30. I was dumbfounded. I was watching the game. I was legitimately dumbfounded by how panicky this Rockets team is. They panicked. They looked scared. And my panic meter, you know what? It's at, and please don't call me a hater, it's at 9.99999 out of 10. Because, and no team has ever done it. No team has ever come back from 3-0, and that's not what I'm suggesting. And maybe I'm just stubborn, and I've taken too many L's in these predictions to just admit to taking another L. But The one thing last night, and teams rarely win game four after fighting so much for three games, but Luke Kennard went back to being human. Marcus Smart went back to being human. Because let's not act like Marcus Smart was a 20-point scorer ever in his career. And somehow in the playoffs, he's been 20 and 10. Easy. And it could be 10 rebounds, or it could be 10 assists. It could be 10 deflections. I don't care. Marcus Smart just finds a way to impact winning. And shouts out to Marcus. He's had an amazing postseason. Shouts out to Luke Kennard. Has had an amazing postseason. But you cannot tell me that these dudes are going to keep performing like that for the whole playoffs. And maybe the same could have been said. I wrote in my notes about the Heat in 2023, right? When Gabe Vincent and Caleb Martin just played out of their minds. Mike Strus was playing out of his mind. And then, you know, a couple years later, Gabe Vincent barely gets on the NBA court anymore, even though he's finding some motion in Atlanta, right? He's getting some minutes. But Caleb Martin has just fallen off the face of the earth, right? So maybe it's a case like that, and they can keep it going. But also, the truth is the Rockets have just been horrendous. Actually horrendous. In closing out games, in inside, like within those games, they haven't been able to defend Marcus Smart and Luke Kennard. I struggle with his name so much. And Reed Sheppard, I said we'll talk about him. Reed Sheppard, God bless you. First of all, brother, God bless you. You weren't born to be more than 6 foot. And that's what, like, that ain't your fault, bro. You know what I'm saying? That ain't your fault. You weren't born to be above 6 foot. Because I don't care what the NBA site says. Reed Sheppard is not 6 foot. That boy is 5'10 at best. I can recognize a brother who's 5'10. And he got targeted the whole fourth quarter and the whole overtime. And the truth is, I think Ime Udoka should have taken him out earlier. But again, I'm not the coach. And second, they kind of had to keep him in there because nobody's been able to shoot the ball. Tari Eason has forgotten how to shoot. Jabari Smith has forgotten how to shoot. Amen Thompson has never been a shooter, right? Even though I saw the stat that, like, in the minutes that Amen Thompson plays within the whole series, the Rockets outscore the Lakers by 7. And then, I think he's playing 90% of the minutes. And with that 10% of minutes he doesn't play, they get outscored by like 15 or something like that, which is insane. But it speaks to the impact of Amen Thompson. What's the outlook now for this series? The Lakers have 3 stabs at it to finish, and they will. They're going back home for game 5. Bronny James is playing minutes. Bronny James is playing minutes in the series, right? And they have been bad minutes. It's the crazy part. What is 2026? What is these playoffs? Bronny James is playing, catching a lob from his own father. Now, ain't that the dream, bro? Man. Maybe one day I'll get to do a radio show with my son. See, it's the equivalent. I'm not trying to bring it back to our scale, but you know what I'm saying. The Rockets are not coming back. You know what? I'll put it in my notes. I'll put it back at 10. I'll put it at 10. It's at 10. The Rockets need to panic, and this offseason is going to be a very scary one, even if you're named KD. Before we get out of here, I do want to talk about the Wolves versus Nuggets. Again, my prediction was the Nuggets getting out of there in 6. Well, again, my predictions have been very wrong, and it's kind of become like the norm. The Minnesota Timberwolves are up 3-1 on the Denver Nuggets. Rudy Gobert, here goes your MVP. Here goes your MVP. He's been locking up Nikola Jokic, who has been putting up stats, but his shooting numbers have been horrendous, especially inside the paint. I got to talk also about the injuries, right? The Minnesota Timberwolves lost Dante DiVincenzo and Anthony Edwards, both in the same game. For Dante, it's an Achilles tear, which is terrible to see. So he'll be out for the rest of the season. And then for Anthony Edwards, who just came back from injuring his left knee, now it's the right knee, which is hyperextended. But shout out to Ayo Dosunmu for absorbing all the powers and dropping a career-high 43 points in the playoffs to close out game 4. Unfortunately, I can see that we are running out of time. But the last thing I'll just say on the series is that Jaden McDaniels is a bad man who said he was attacking all the bad defenders and then listed off all the players on that, almost all the players on that Nuggets rotation, like it was a gosh damn menu. Barbecue, chicken, some grits, some collard greens. I'm eating it all. And they've stepped up. And I love what Chris Finch said in the podium, said that they challenged them to not be immature and to actually keep true to their word and actually fight in this series, and they have. Shout out to the Timberwolves. And with the 10 seconds that we have left, I'm a bit rushed, but thank you so much for listening. Have an amazing week, guys, and we will be back on next week. That's for sure. Take care. Bye.